Welcome to Chevron's Locked, a Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Millie.
And with us this episode, we have a special guest, Andrea, who is my friend who's visiting. Andrea, anything to say for yourself?
Hello, I'm Andrea. And I easily know the least about Stargate of everybody present, so this is going to be a really interesting experience for me. I think it would be best if we just create some sort of drinking game out of it, where every time I say something that is that doesn't make any sense in light of the rest of the series, or that is only partially relevant, you take a swig of something.
I like it.
That's what I'm proposing, because I really don't know how well I'll be able to contribute to this.
How many episodes have you seen?
I've seen, so help me with this.
She's seen through First Commandment, and then this one.
I saw up through the Mr. Matthews episode.
So you've seen shitty episodes only.
Yes, yes. Well, and this one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is not shitty.
This is a good one. This is a good episode.
Yeah. So this episode we're talking about, Fire and Water, which is the 13th episode of season one. The story on this one was by Brad Wright and Catherine Powers, and the teleplay was by Catherine Powers. So, like, she's slowly redeeming herself.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And is directed by Alan Eastman. And as far as I could tell, it was his first and only episode that he directed. And it aired the 17th of October, 1997. And we have Gerard Plunkett, who plays on the IMDb, it says his name is Nem. I never heard them say his name in the episode.
He does. He says it at the end.
Okay.
One time.
One time. I feel like
as Daniel's leaving, he calls him by his name or something.
Yep.
Okay.
In all of my notes, he's just known as Davy Jones.
Yeah. He's just way better than Fish Dude.
He started out as Mr. Fish.
And then
he became Davy Jones the longer I was writing.
I actually called him Nem in my notes because the synopsis told me his name.
Oh, so nice.
So, Gerard Plunkett is also notable because he was the guy in Broca Divide. He's the leader of the Minotians, is that what they were called?
Yeah.
What is his name?
The guy with the crop top? With the hat.
The guy with the crop top, yes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So
he looks much better in that episode than this episode. A little skin condition in this one.
All right. Before we dive in, let's get our spoiler warnings. Although we may be a little bit less spoilery tonight with Andrea here, although I don't know how much you care about spoilers.
I mean, I don't want to deprive the audience of their normal experience. So I'd say, honestly, just say whatever you want to say, and chances are I might forget it by the time that it actually
would become relevant. From what I've heard, you already know what happens with Sam and Jack, so it's fine, right?
I already know what happens with Sam and Jack.
She's seen the gifts.
I've seen the gifts, yes.
Yeah, so I mean...
Okay.
All right, we'll also warn for content. Because Jess is present.
Oh, yeah. It's, guys, the notes on this one. I just need you to brace yourself. I'm going to keep it as ship light as possible, but I make no promises. Oh, no. I'm here to encourage because I also have lots of ship notes.
Excellent.
All right. Mel, why don't you hit us with the synopsis?
Okay. So the synopsis is SG-1 returns to Earth, convinced Daniel is dead. While they mourn their loss, they begin to have the feeling that their memories are faked to make it look like he died and that he is still alive. Their theory turns out to be correct when Daniel is trapped by... And I don't know what the fish guy's race name is because I can't say that word. Named them to extract information regarding the whereabouts of his mate, Amoroka.
Amoroka. So,
I just want to say, every time I said Amoroka, I really want to say Omarosa instead, and it was really upsetting to me that it wasn't Omarosa.
They said it a lot. That would be another drinking game. If you wanted to get real drunk every time
and
they say
Omarosa, alcohol poisoning,
you would get drunk real fast.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, not super fast, because Daniel doesn't show up until 12 minutes in, but after that, real fast.
Mm-hmm. It's a roller coaster.
So this episode opens on General Hammond and Sergeant Davis Harriman.
Sergeant. Note about that.
Uh-huh.
He is still a technician at this point.
Yeah, he doesn't have a name yet.
But I thought his uniform did have a sergeant. He had a tag on his uniform, and it said Davis.
He's still listed as technician on like the illustrated companion, it says Gary Jones, parentheses, technician.
Okay.
He does not have a name. Even though the costume might have a name, he does not have a name.
Yes.
He also did get called Sergeant.
Yes.
So.
He had Sergeant rank on, and he had a name tag. Although I actually couldn't read it. I just assumed it said Davis and sort of looked like that size of a name. And they're, I mean, they're just talking, and then the gate, there's an incoming wormhole, and they go down, they're getting SG-1's activation code for the Iris, and they're surprised because they've only been gone a couple hours and they weren't expecting them back. And out of the gate comes a very wet and traumatized looking SG-1 minus Daniel.
Yep.
And they look so freaked out, you guys.
It's pretty rough. The whole scene starts rough, mostly because our technician slash Davis slash Gary Jones calls it the fucking Stargate room.
Thank you. I wrote that down.
So I was like, the what now?
Have we ever called it that?
Nope.
It was the embarkation room, and then it was the Stargate room.
Well, it was the gate room. It was never the Stargate room.
Yeah. I was like, this episode, for some reason, it was the Stargate. Med team to the Stargate room? What? So that's with a jarring also to like kick things off. And then, of course, you see Sam stumbling down, being held up by Jack and Teal'c, who have a hand on either side of her, on each arm, kind of holding her up. Man, this is rough.
It is rough.
Baby Sam. Amanda Tapping killed this episode, by the way.
She was really good.
Every time she's sad, I'm just like, be happy, stop it, please.
And like, yeah, they just look shell-shocked, and Janet rushes in and tells them that, you know, you're in shock, basically.
Yeah, and then we get asking where Daniel is, so I pulled that clip.
Colonel, where's Dr. Jackson?
Daniel Jackson.
He didn't make it, sir.
Daniel's dead, sir.
Rough.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, and they look, you guys, they do such a good job of just looking so completely devastated and broken, all
That's
of them.
That's kind of like the whole episode up until like a certain point towards the end, but they're basically just shell-shocked and grieving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really sad.
And then the credits roll.
Then the credits is a super short cold open. I think the shortest cold open they've ever done. And then it's just like, yeah, bam, credits. Okay. Yeah. That's
I was trying to think like, being a viewer, like as it was opening, as this was like airing live, like at the time, I wonder how many people were like, did they really though?
Yeah,
like, is this real? Because they get pretty far into it. Like the next scene is, never mind. We'll keep going.
Yeah.
The funeral thing kind of sold it for me. And I was just trying to think like, if I was viewing it real time, like I've had some doubts.
Right.
So when I first watched it, I knew that Daniel was in the next episode, but I still felt like he died.
Yeah.
Like I was still under the impression he was going to die. And
yeah, it's true.
Is about me.
Yeah, I was watching it and I could only assume that he survived somehow just because I know that he's one of the main characters. And I know from listening to earlier podcasts that you two have this like long-standing vendetta against Daniel. And I was like, surely their vendetta is not like hinging upon the first 10 episodes of the series. Like there must be more to it.
Vendetta aside, I was saying before we actually started recording that I actually love Daniel. This is my favorite Daniel episode, I think. I love Daniel in this episode. I will stand hard for Daniel on this particular episode.
Wow.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I'm in the same boat, actually.
Yay! Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
This feels like a big deal.
This is also the episode that sold Stargate for me, too. Like, it hadn't caught me until this actual episode.
And then Hathor happened and I was like, I texted you guys and I was like, and you're like, I swear it's the last one like that.
It's the last rape one, I promise.
Yeah. But no, because this one, I agree with you, Mel. It helped bring home, but we can talk more about that later.
Yeah, sorry. We gotta stay focused. So next scene, Chelsea, go.
So after the credits, we go to the infirmary where Sam is crying and Janet is comforting her. I pulled a little bit of that just because I love them, those two, so much.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone, isn't he?
I stop shaking?
You're still in shock, Captain. It's all right. You're gonna be all right.
Amanda tapping, just every time she cries, she's so good.
Die.
She's so good.
She was really good in this episode.
And I just love Janet being so sweet with her.
Well, and Sam looks so small wrapped up in that blanket. Like, mm-hmm. I just want to cuddle her. Like,
and her eyes look so big.
Yes.
So, just like a little cartoon character or something.
Like a baby doe.
Yeah.
I also, it made me wonder just the way she was reacting, if this was like her first time or maybe only the second or third time that she's lost a teammate as close as she and Daniel were, because she like couldn't seem to like identify her own emotions, and she seemed like the most shaken up about losing Daniel.
Yeah, I think that's possible, especially because as a pilot, depending like she maybe wouldn't ever have been like that up close and personal to losing someone, even if even if she lost people she knew in the Gulf, she wouldn't have been like watching them be engulfed in flames,
right? So yeah, like the memory that got planted, like Daniel had enough time to like call out for help.
I know, rough.
So yeah, man, Nem wasn't messing around with that memory.
Yeah. And then, so then we get Jack and Teal'c, and Teal'c is refusing to cooperate or get his blood pressure taken, and he's the only one who's not in scrubs. So right, Sam and Jack were like
in boxers.
What?
Teal'c is in boxers or shorts,
and he was wearing like a khaki shirt, like the I think
I don't know if it was a
military kind of brown, the tan.
Yeah, and it was like and it was green, either boxers or shorts.
And so he bails. He's like refuses to let them work on him. And then Jack is in slippers and he's like sitting at the head of the bed with his knees tucked up to his chest. It's so heartbreaking.
Yeah, the slippers I was very distracted by.
Yeah.
Like, not for any like weird sexual reason. I just thought it was really cute. They're like little plaid tartan slippers. They're adorable.
Chelsea just learned what the word tartan means.
Yes, thank you. Not right this instant, but
recently.
While I was listening to Harry Potter. I was listening to Harry Potter and it always describes McGonagall in tartan robes. And I was like, the hell is tartan?
Because she's Scottish.
Yeah. Well, it made sense once I looked it up.
Yeah. Yes. I love Jack and his little slippers. That was like my highlight of that scene.
I have to be honest, I didn't even notice the slippers.
Welcome to the pub.
I just figured Jess was going to take over the slippers.
Like, we're fucking freaks, okay? We know the slippers.
But so Jack is just like super broken, and Janet is examining him, and he's super sensitive to the pit. I love that she flashes the light in his eyes, and he's like, "What was that?" And I was like, she was a pen light, and he's like, I'm like, yeah, Jack, dude, come on.
Yeah, what did you think she was doing to you? Interrogating you?
Well, I feel like he was just sort of like not there. Like psychologically, he was off somewhere else. And the next thing you know is he has like this massive light in his eye. He probably did think it was some sort of like crazy spotlight. Like,
yeah. Well, and
just because that's how he registered it.
Uh-huh. So he was super photosensitive, and that's. That was the end of that scene, right? When he's like...
Yeah. The only other thing I noted is, like, so there's this, like, really long pause. So Jack gets up from the bed after Janet is, like, you know, we can do this, the rest of this exam tomorrow or, like, after your debrief. Like, obviously, you're in shock. So Jack gets up off the bed, and he kind of, like, lingers. Like, he stands at the edge of the bed, and there's, like, this, like, lingering shot of him. Like, he wants to say something. And he kind of, like, looks over his shoulder at Janet, double takes, and then... goes off scene. And I just wanted to know, like, it's almost like he wanted to reach out, he wanted to say something but didn't know how, but there was like definitely like a lingering him just sitting there and being silent and like brooding basically.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. I expected that to come back into play somehow, but it was never really answered. I guess, I mean, now that we know that the memories are sort of false, like you can sort of go back in time and sort of correct that moment in your mind and understand why it happened. But I did write it down like that was sort of a weird moment as Jack was leaving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because he's grabbing his head, so he's clearly like something is something.
Mm-hmm. So then we go to the briefing room and they all are recapping. It's one of those scenes where it's like taking turns going through them.
I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I loved that sort of that like interrogation / debrief format, jumping between the perspectives and like creating the story in hindsight, where the audience doesn't get to see this story unfold. The actors literally have to create it just through their performances of that scene and through like the way that they're emoting while describing the events. It was a really powerful, really powerful way of telling that story.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Andrea, you're hired. You can come.
Yes.
On podcast anytime. It was very professional. Bravo. Our next episode's Hathor. You just keep your Thursdays clear.
Yeah. No, that's, I 100% agree with that. It's a great scene. And I love the different ways that each character is kind of seeming to process it. Like Teal'c is going through it very orderly and, you know, this is what happened, boom, boom, boom. And Sam just seems to be a lot more emotional about it. And Jack, it's like you can feel the guilt dripping off of him. He's just...
And he, like, snaps. And yeah. Did you pull any of his, yeah. like, oh, God, he just blames himself so much.
But yeah. He does.
I know.
It's a Jack thing. I know.
All right. Here's what I pulled. I didn't pull the whole thing.
There was nothing you could have done, Colonel.
No, I swear to God, sir, I tried to get to him, but the heat was... It blasted toward us, and...
And what did you do then?
There was a body of water somewhere nearby. It was like a lake, or a sea, maybe. We all submerged ourselves. That's what saved us.
And by then?
By then, Daniel was gone.
I didn't pull all of it because I didn't see, but just that emotional moment, and then like stutter.
He didn't
want
to leave him. Oh, nope. In just knowing that Jack never leaves anybody and that he had to leave him behind,
mm-hmm.
hurts.
And it's not part of the pull clip, but like right after that, he like tells Hammond, he's like, I tried to get to him, I swear. Mm-hmm. Like, I know. We know you did. Ugh.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking. Well, and the little stutter and the way that he can't even keep talking about it. It's so good.
And then he again, like, ends that confession by, like, grabbing his head. Like Andrea was saying, like, in the moment, you're like, it's like he can't believe it. And he's, like, holding his head out of, like grief and disbelief. But then, like, you kind of go back and you see it in the bigger context of there's this weird memory that's, like, plucking at his head. And you're like, oh, okay, no. All right, it's just your memory flaring up.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to be every time he holds his head is when he's thinking about going back to the planet to go get Daniel. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, we don't know that yet, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So then General Hammond says, we'll send a team back to get his body. And Jack freaks. He's like, no, you can't do that. And it's too dangerous. The planet is too unstable. You can't send anyone back. And in the context of that, it's mostly just like he doesn't want to, you assume, oh, he doesn't want to lose anybody else. But then at the end of the episode, we realize that there's more going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then, yeah. So, and at this point, we're still like 9 or so minutes in and still no Daniel. It's like, did they really kill him? Like, holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
So the next scene is Janet and General Hammond. I should say like Dr. Fraser. I don't know. Yeah. She's Janet.
And she's Janet.
In the control room, and she's telling them that physically they're fine other than like a few minor symptoms, but she's worried about their post-traumatic symptoms. And I pulled a lot of it because this scene is so baffling to me. Like that General Hammond is like, yeah, they have these symptoms of post-traumatic stress, but the best idea is to just send them back through. Let's just put them back in the field. And I'm like, mm-hmm. General Hammond, they watched their best friend die. This isn't falling off of a bicycle.
This is PTSD treatment 1997
style. So I pulled a decent amount of this clip. So I'm just going to play it and then we can talk about how
shitty it is.
Yeah.
Frankly, General, I'm more worried about their post-traumatic symptoms.
When your lives depend on each other, you form very deep bonds. Theirs is a very dangerous job.
Yes, of course, sir. It's just I can't help but be concerned. Call it intuition.
The best thing we can do is get them on another mission. I plan to put them back in the rotation as soon as I can assign a replacement for Dr. Jackson.
No, sir. I don't agree. I want to keep them under observation for several days at least.
In my experience, Doctor, it's best for the surviving members of the team to go...
With all due respect... Your experience doesn't include gate travel to another planet, nor does anyone else's experience for that matter. Several days at least, I insist.
Very well, I'll put them on stand down for 7 days.
Thank you, sir.
You guys, Jenna is such a badass, though. Because, like, he's the freaking CO of the entire base. He's a 2-star general, and she's a captain, right?
Mm-hmm. And but she's the chief medical officer, so whatever she says kind of goes.
Yeah. Right, but she's still like a fairly young officer, and she's just like, hell no.
But, okay, so it is cringy that Hammond wants to send them back on a mission, but I can also kind of, especially in 1997, kind of understand where he's like, we're going to get their minds off of what happened to Daniel, so let's just send them back into danger.
Yeah.
That's the only way that we can do that.
I'm more like, how do you in one breath say, okay, going off world, you form deep bonds with their teammate, and then in the next breath be like, well, as soon as I find a replacement for old Jackson boy, I'm going to go right back through the gate. It's like, well, it's one or the other. You need more than 7 days to recover from the loss of a teammate. But then I guess also I understand like SG-1 or the SGC is like, we've got missions and objectives, and I don't know how it works in the real military. Like when your team, if you lose a member of your team, how much time you get, if you have PTSD symptoms, like currently, I don't know what the plan is. But 7 days definitely doesn't seem like enough.
No, I mean, I think when you're in really active combat situations and you lose people, you just have to keep going, right? Like there's
like Hammond said.
Yeah, there's nothing to be done about it. But I think if it's like you've just come home from some kind of mission and you've lost someone, that there definitely is some amount of downtime. But
yeah,
I also wonder if he was thinking about trying to prevent any of the team from like bailing ship after this loss, because there was that scene a little bit later where he's talking to Jack and Jack is like throwing around the word retirement, and Hammond's trying to like talk him out of it, like, no, your place is here, like you need to stay with the team. I wonder if that's part of his strategy, is like just get them back in the field, remind them why they're here, and keep the team together kind of thing.
Yeah, totally.
But this is one of the moments where, I mean, I love Janet pretty much from the moment she was introduced, but this scene where I was like, so I love that she sticks to her guns and stands up for herself. And Hammond kind of gives her some sass because he's like, in my experience, doctor. And the way he says doctor is like, why are you saying doctor like that? It means she knows what she's talking about.
You know what's weird though? So after the con and hearing the way that like Gary Jones talked about Donna Davis's accent, it makes me wonder how much of that's acting and how much of that is just Donna Davis doing some weird fucking like inflection on a word.
Maybe that's just how
it's actually how he, like, so I watched some of the featurettes on the season 1 disc because I thought they were gone off Hulu. It's actually how he talks. Yeah. Just in general.
Yeah.
Well,
there you go.
Yeah, that was a weird scene. Yeah, that was just I don't understand the idea of like not trusting your CMO. Like, why would you think, like, I guess him, he's like, oh, I'm a battle hardened soldier. So here, in my experience, here's how we do it.
Yeah.
And your doctor's like, no.
Well, maybe Janet's never seen combat, so she's just,
we don't really know Janet's backstory.
From what she's, read about.
Doctors in general don't see combat.
Unless they're, I guess, like combat medics.
Hmm.
So then we do the funeral, and Daniel gets...
Also a weird scene.
Such a weird scene. Daniel gets full military honors. Like, it's kind of crazy. He wasn't in the military.
No.
And, so I mentioned to Andrew when we were watching it, I was like, I wonder if for scenes like this, they get real service people, because they're not acting.
I wanted the same thing!
They did. They did. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I looked at, I did a little research on it, and I don't know what portion of them. But I think at least the ones who were like folding the flag and didn't have any lines and not really even seeing their faces, some of the people in the military, in the funeral service, were actual Air Force service members. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Which it makes sense, because otherwise you have to teach actors like the proper military protocol for that situation. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to just get service members, and they're not speaking, so they don't have to be SAG. And you can just have them do their military thing. And
you know what's kind of terrible of me, the entire time that funeral scene was happening, I was like, this is the most expensive funeral I've ever seen in my life, because that gate is open for so fucking long while nothing is happening. They're just they had it open before the soldiers walked in or the servicemen walked in. Like, how long was that gate open? Because all I could think about is Kenzie being like, do you know how much money it costs to open this gate? It's like, yeah, fucking A, we're having it open just into the void somewhere.
Yeah, I wonder where they dialed. Abydos, I mean, maybe?
I thought it was hilarious whenever they put the wreath on.
Yeah, she was like, yes.
I was like, what's on the other side? Like, and how did it stick there? I don't understand. Like, was there a nail sticking out on the other side that they, like, hung the wreath on and then it all just got sucked into
It was just like the slowest ascent into the wormhole I've ever seen in my life.
There's just some random planet somewhere that just had like this star spangled wreath land out of nowhere.
Yep. I think it must, but so if it was Abydos though, then their Stargate was buried, right?
Yeah,
Daniel told them to bury it, so they wouldn't have been able to get they wouldn't have been able to open a wormhole there, so they must have just sent it
disintegrated.
Well, no, because I think when it's buried, you can't even establish, depending how well it's buried.
True, because in 100 days, the gate was buried, and they could dial through. And they could, however, chisel out through or whatever.
I think it depends how, yeah. No, because I guess you can establish a wormhole even if the iris is closed, too, right?
We need a physicist on this show.
I don't think this is covered by normal physics.
I just thought they may have a better theoretical grasp of how, like, wormholes and shit work. I don't know what the rules are.
Well, but wormholes aren't generally being established out of a gate, so...
Hey, you don't know. It could be real. What's under Cheyenne Mountain is all I'm saying.
NORAD.
NORAD. Deep space telemetry. All joking aside, the funeral scene was very moving.
It was moving, and I pulled the clip of Jack's eulogy.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Daniel Jackson made this place happen. As a member of SG-1, he was our voice, our conscience. He's a very courageous man. He's a good man. For those of us lucky enough to have known him,
The end. He was a friend.
Cliffhanger there. We'll never know.
I mean, I can cut in the real thing at the end, but...
He was also a friend.
That's a great eulogy.
It was a nice eulogy.
And I think it also goes to why I like Daniel's episode. It's like the most idealized version of Daniel. Mm-hmm. Like, being the voice and the conscience of the team. Like, yes. I think that is a good... thing.
Mm-hmm. But not in the holier than thou version.
Yes. In this particular episode, he does it great.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked it. And I liked that it was Jack who gave the eulogy and like that it was Jack who received the flag and then handed it off to Teal'c, mm-hmm. because SG-1 is Daniel's family.
Mm-hmm. And then he and Sam put the wreath through.
Oh, I mean, side by side, I know it's not a shippy moment, but I just wanted to say they're framed in shot together alone doing a military thing. And then I noted it is all I'm saying.
They look very good in their dress blues.
Hell yeah, they do.
But without their covers.
Yeah, so I noticed it was weird. Some of them were wearing their hats and some of them weren't. And I didn't understand that.
I can only assume that is 100% aesthetics from like a filming standpoint.
Yeah, because generally the rule is you don't wear your hat inside. You wear your cover out of doors. Yeah.
Maybe you can bend the rules whenever the Stargate's open to just some like random
technically
place.
Technically outdoors.
Maybe it was outdoors and indoors in a way.
I'll take it.
All right, so now we're 12 plus minutes in, and we see Daniel, a very wet and disoriented Daniel, who is calling out to his teammates.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, we just get a shot of him, and he's like, Jack, Sam, Teal'c.
He was also pretty hot.
I was about to say, he actually looks real hot this episode.
I thought the same.
Michael Shanks is an attractive man.
Yeah, he's attractive, but I found him hot this episode.
Okay.
There's two different, you know.
Especially because later he gets like a little bit of scruff, and I was like, hello, yes, great.
I generally like him better with his short hair later. But
but you know what? The long hair wasn't bad when it was wet.
Yeah, it was better. Less James Spader-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guys, look at us agreeing on Daniel. This is history in the making.
I'm enjoying it.
This is Chelsea. You're at the tipping point. I mean, this is it.
No, he is about to be a rape victim, so you guys better be nice to him next week.
That's fair.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Okay. We're almost at the tipping point. We're more right here, and then we're going to go up a little higher, and then it goes...
He's got some good ones.
Honestly, like, looking at the rest of season one, there's not that much.
There's not. He does okay the rest of season one.
Like Singularity and Solitudes, he's good. And
what's that? I said we're almost there. And then as we get there slowly to season two, it's going to go...
Yeah.
We got a ways to go before the frustration hits.
Yeah, so then there's the wake at Jack's house. And yes. Jack is being, like, adorable, but he's also talking about Abydos, like...
A random woman!
He's just at his house, and who knows who's at this wake, and he's just like, we were on Abydos. That's another planet, by the way.
Is that classified? Yes. Is that why it's weird for him to be talking about it?
I feel like, considering that we just had in Torment of Tantalus all these rules about classification and classified, and then in this episode, Jack's walking around talking about fucking Abydos, and then Daniel's got a library full of expedition journals of all the planets he's been to and all the missions they've been on.
I noted that. I'll mention it when we get there.
Okay, I guess we're not classifying anything anymore.
Yeah. First off, rules don't apply to Jack.
Or SG-1, period. Which is why Sam and Jack can actually break the frat regs. Rules don't apply. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Sam explains what a wake is to Teal'c, and it's kind of a great moment back and forth where Teal'c says that on Chulak, when someone dies, you don't eat for days. Mm-hmm. It's like, we do things way differently.
Yeah. And Sam's like, this is way different, man. And I like it. And we drink and we celebrate.
And like, Teal'c kind of like still adhered to his tradition because, like, when Jack offered him a drink, he was like, I cannot or I must not, or something like that. Like, he referenced that he wouldn't, basically.
Does Teal'c ever drink? Because I feel like he generally doesn't, like, when they're drinking alcohol, he's usually drinking like Sprite.
No, he doesn't drink alcohol.
And I love him for it. It's like, relate to Teal'c.
He can't with his symbiote?
I think they mentioned it at some point.
Yeah, it's mentioned.
Where? When? I want data. I want backup.
In an episode? I don't know. We'll get there.
Yeah. Well, because I wrote down, I said, is there ever an explanation for Teal'c's sobriety? Because I feel like I remember there being one, but I can't place when it was. But he doesn't drink. Yeah, my handwriting's terrible.
I'm pretty sure it has to do with the symbiote, or it's something about Chulak where he doesn't drink.
See, I just assumed when he said no in this episode, it was because he had literally just said that as part of his morning ritual, he doesn't eat and all that jazz.
I think that's part of it, but in the future, he doesn't drink either.
Ooh. Also, I really like Sam in the flower dress.
Okay, I was going to say, can you talk about how hot Sam looks?
Always.
She looked good in that dress. Jack looked great, too. He was just in blue jeans, a black t-shirt, and bugaboos.
I was going to say, like, you're going to mention the bugaboos.
Yeah, he looks real hot.
Also, I appreciated his liquor setup that he had going on the table there. It was, like, all professional. It was, like, the bottles were upside down. He had little spouts.
Uh-huh. And, like, but then he poured the beer wrong. Anybody else notice that? You're supposed to pour it against the side of the glass, and he just plopped it down in the center of the glass. I was like, what are you doing? That's going to be too frothy.
I definitely wrote that down. I was like, dude, please tell me you know how to pour beer. And
evidently he doesn't.
He always drinks it just straight out of the bottle, guys.
Yeah, he does. No, that's a gift.
There's a gift. Know how to properly pour beer.
Okay? He doesn't even know how to properly drink it out of a bottle. Remember the gift? He, like, puts the whole thing in his mouth.
He fucks that bottle with his mouth. Okay? He does. We've seen the gifts. That's why he's not used to a glass.
Because he can't get his mouth around it.
Exactly. There's another liquor drink around joke in here somewhere. Liquor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Roll with it.
Okay.
Oh my god, okay. Oh my
god. Yeah. So then as he's
hey, we put a warning on this. This is fine.
Yeah. As he's incorrectly pouring the beer, he has like a bubbly flashback of Daniel yelling and just keeps pouring it and overflowing. And I love that Sam and Teal'c just kind of watch it happen. They don't really actually stop him. He's just like spilling beer, and Sam looks all concerned, but she doesn't immediately be like, "Hey, whoa, you're spilling the beer, man."
I'm just looking around like,
what's yeah. I feel like my response would be like to stop the spilling.
To say when.
Yeah. It's enough.
I also want to point out that Jack calls Sam in that scene.
Yes. She Are we says, keeping a running tally of that?
Nope, but I will.
Is this the first one?
No.
No, it's Mm-mm. not.
He calls her Sam and Samantha and Roka Divide.
Oh, right.
There's a Sam in Children of the Gods. But I think that's it. It's not often.
When does he do the Samantha?
In Roka Divide?
Emancipation. Well, remember? Emancipation. With the dress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Does he say?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
What do you say, Mel?
Does he say Samantha in Broken Divide?
Yes. Talking about Samantha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotcha. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Oh, he doesn't say it to her, but he refers to her as Samantha. Yeah.
Yes. If you have any more questions about the way Jack refers to Sam, please direct them my way. I'm willing to rifle through the old directory.
Yeah, I didn't note that one because normally I would pull it for you when he calls her Sam.
Thanks, Chelsea. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, so then we go to the weird water place and the fish guy, or Davy Jones, I like that. Davy Jones points to a panel opens, sort of like old school Jeopardy style. Mm-hmm. And there's this language on it. Daniel immediately recognizes it as Akkadian. He identifies it. And then he starts translating it. And it's real. So this is something I mentioned in the movie and in the past, that I don't feel like this is what it looks like when you're translating ancient text like this, that he's just like reading it, and that there's a name. So Amaroka is a name, and he just like sounds it out. And again, I don't speak Akkadian or read cuneiform. So maybe that is that he's just reading like, but I don't think it's phonetic. I don't know
if there's even like sound associated with it, because not all written language is associated with sound.
Right. Yeah. That's what I meant by phonetic. Like instead of like, you know, because a lot of times it's like pictograph, like another language is sometimes it's words and it's not just like syllables and sounds. Yeah.
Can we add a linguist as well as a physicist to this show?
Yeah, I don't know any. We should have grabbed that girl at the con.
I was about to say, according to Shanks, being a linguist is a sad thing.
Okay, related. So remember I said about the Ukrainian chick who made friends with me in the airport?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Her name is Marina, I think. I don't know if you're going to cut this or not. If you're going to cut this, great. If you're not going to cut it, her name is Marina. So she's a linguist, and she speaks like 5 or 6 different languages. And she was telling me about like the whole reason she became a linguist was because of Daniel Jackson. And I was like, were you the chick who like went and asked the question? And she was like, no, but I related to that.
Does she do anything with linguist?
Like, yeah, she's like a fucking badass. She's about to like join the Department of Defense or Department of Justice, doing something with that. But she wants to go to get her master's in like Moscow and do like computational linguistics, which has something to do with like creating programs related to translation and communication. It's really cool.
Yeah. There's things in linguistics. Like, I actually think being a linguist is an easier thing to find work for than an archaeologist.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you love languages, it's a fascinating and I think rewarding thing to do. But if you go into archaeology because of Indiana Jones and Daniel Jackson, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what archaeology is.
Unless you look like Harrison Ford.
I mean, if you look like Harrison Ford, go into something else. Yes, I do think doors open for you if you look like Harrison Ford.
Like my bedroom door, am I correct?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Anyway,
that was for you, Melanie.
If any linguists are listening to this podcast and can explain to us, like, how translating something like cuneiform goes, I'd actually be very interested to hear that, because it's something that I wonder all throughout this series. Anytime Daniel's translating something, I'm like, how does that work? Because it's my understanding with ancient languages, usually there's like, so my aunt is kind of an expert in, she teaches at a university for Greek and Latin. And there's usually like four different possible words for one thing that you could translate that would be, mm-hmm. and none of them are exact English. Like there's no such thing as exact translations from ancient Greek to English. You're mm-hmm. like going for best match. And so the fact that he always is like so specific about how he translates things is interesting.
Yeah.
It's so we can move the story forward.
No, I... You're absolutely right.
We gotta find out who Omaroka is.
We do. And we need to hear her name 40,000 times in this episode.
We sure do.
So he really needed to translate it.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't understand what he's supposed to be doing, and he gets zapped for his troubles.
Yeah, I gotta say,
fate of Omaroka.
So Omaroka. I didn't pull. Well, I did pull that clip, but we're gonna play them all at the end.
I also want to like kind of shout out like the prosthetics and like physical makeup of Davy Jones was badass.
Yeah.
Like considering it was 97 and like. Where prosthetic makeup was at the time, it looked, I think it still held up a lot. The suit part, maybe not so much. It looked like he was just wearing plastic netting, but like the face part was badass.
No, his outfit looked like he was a fish who got stuck in a six pack.
It container. Did. Yes, that's exactly what it looked like. Yes. But his face part was super, super cool.
Yeah.
And the set also was really cool. Like the way that the water, like the light was being used to like insinuate that it was underwater and like the sound effects and like all the cool things that was like, oh, it's alien, but we're under, all very, very cool. So shout out to whoever did the set stuff, who I didn't find your name. So
yeah, well, and the effects around. Because there were a lot of effects, and they, you're right, they did the lights and shimmering, and then they also during the funeral scene, because the gate was open the whole time, it was like reflecting on their faces during the entire funeral. And I was like, what poor CGI artist had to do this because they decided to open the gate at the beginning of the funeral.
Yeah. And they wonder like how much of it was CGI and how much it was like practical effects using like just straight up lights.
Oh, I know they used a lot of practical effects, especially early on. They used like Mylar and lights.
Right.
So
old school.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to note that the set and the makeup both held up really, really well.
They
it's
did.
True. It was hard to get yourself in the mindset of this is a prison because it was so beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, this is a really nice place to be. It's sort of spa-like in a sense.
Yeah.
And then it did. It felt very relaxing, like soothing.
Yeah.
Unless you're Daniel.
Unless you're Daniel.
Not.
Mm-hmm. And he was getting like low-key tortured, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the mattress was basically like a sheet of glass coming out of the wall.
And it was like this wide. It was maybe a foot across. I realize using hand gesture doesn't help on a podcast, but it was like this wide.
It's true. It looked like one of those trays that, you know, they pull out of the refrigerator at the morgue.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Which is not a good, that's not a good mental association.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
No, I do not want to sleep in a morgue drawer.
No. Although, maybe it's cozy. I don't know.
Not if you're claustrophobic.
I think that's the next scene, though. I think I just jumped ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. We do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Slap on the wrist.
Yeah. So then we go back to the wake, and Jack is not doing super great emotionally. He's... Do you want to just talk?
Really, really hot in this scene.
So Jess was just doing a little dance for those of you who can't see. So I'm just gonna let her tell us about Jack in this scene.
Oh, I mean, yes, he's working through his emotions by playing some street hockey, which I got questions about. It was already out. Does he play it frequently? Who knows? But
it was definitely Rick's hockey stick because it said Anderson on the tape.
It said Anderson on it. Yeah. Yes. So for those of you who want to know where it is, it's when he is pulling his stick down. He's talking about retirement, and he like pulls his stick down across his neck, and he like transfers it to his other hand, and you pause right at the right moment. You can see Anderson written on the tape on the handle, which is badass and hot.
Which I didn't notice until just pointed it out to me earlier.
I got you, girl.
Anyway.
So Jack is very upset. He is shooting goals, and the goal falls down, and then he turns to a car and smashes the shit out of it and is like, well, someone move this car out of the way. Hammond comes over. They talk. Jack is saying that he's considering retirement. And Hammond basically says, don't do that. We still need you. Uh-huh. And then we find out that the car that was smashed up was General Hammond's car.
Which was kind of a crappy car.
Yes. Maybe two-star generals don't get paid as much as they think they do.
They get paid pretty well.
Maybe he has a...
He paid it off, guys. They moan.
Yeah. He's putting his money elsewhere.
Yeah, he's smart.
Toward his grandchildren's college funds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I pulled that scene out. I don't think we have to listen to it, but...
Oh, no, we should.
Hang on, though. So, Jack talks about retirement, but he's talking about it a couple times, and it seems like he can't retire, like they won't let him retire. So, I don't understand. I don't know.
So, from, like, I would say a ship perspective, I found it interesting that Jack is, like, so willing to walk away from SG-1. Like, as much as Jack likes SG-1, I do feel like if the right reason came along... Sam, that he would leave SG-1 and or offer up retirement. I think that Hammond's, like, you can't retire in this scene was more like Andrea was saying earlier, like, don't leave right now. Like, this isn't the way you should leave, like, in, like, a rush of emotions, kind of. Like, don't jump ship. We still need you. Don't leave this way.
Yeah.
But leave another way. For example, if you fall in love with your 2IC, that's fine.
I think that was there. It was in the subtext.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Right? So early. I'm not sure about that one.
Look, there was a lot of touching in this episode is all I'm saying.
There was a lot.
To the touching.
I mean, we had some in the first
scene.
Mm-hmm.
More to come.
All right. Do you want me to play the clip from the...
Sure do.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Shut up.
What's on your mind, Colonel? Retirement, actually. You don't mean that. I think I do. Well, I can't let you do that at the moment. I got an assignment for SG-1. Dr. Jackson's apartment needs to be closed by Stargate personnel. National security aside, you're probably the closest thing you had to a family. It's not an order, it's a request. Yes, sir. Why don't you come join the others in the back? Yes, sir. You know that's my car, don't you? Should get that window fixed.
He's such a little shit.
Well, especially because he really did sound like a little boy when he's like, yes, sir. Yes. Mm-hmm. He never says yes, sir, in that kind of submissive of a tone.
Mm-mm. I just love him so much.
Really?
Great commentary.
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Well, hi. My name is Jess. I'm deeply in love with Jack O'Neill. If you have any further questions, I'm here.
Yeah. I'm glad that you clarified that for our listeners because they definitely didn't know that either.
Look, I just want to be upfront and transparent. It's what I'm about.
I do love that Jack's, even in his despair, still has a little bit of the sass in him, though. He's like, you should get that window face.
I almost feel like that was ad-libbed.
Yes.
Oh, of course it was.
Yes. Kind of both by Donis Davis and RDA. I want to know if Donis Davis was like, no, that was my car, right?
I mean, I feel like it might have had to be because, like, they were super serious and, like, they had to, like, bring up the moment a little bit to make it not super sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the last we get of the wake, and then it cuts to Daniel, who is translating a legal code, which is like a super rough legal code where if you accuse someone of murder and you fail to prove that they did it, then you die. You get killed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I guess that would prevent false accusations for sure. That's super rough.
Yeah.
And also not a good way to do a legal system, just for the record.
Mm-mm.
But so Daniel is frustrated. He just has no idea what he's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And just keeps getting, it's like the more he asks, he just keeps getting what fake Amaroka back in his face. And it's like, no, that doesn't mean anything to me still.
I felt so bad for Daniel, man. Like, he's clearly frustrated. And also, like, all of this is happening while he is basically held prisoner, mm-hmm. is occasionally being tortured, and his friends are...
He doesn't know where they are right now. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that not where he... Doesn't he say... Oh, no. Is it later that he fesses up?
It's later that he tells him that he gave him the false memories. So right now, he doesn't know where his friends are.
Right.
I pulled the clip because I feel Shanks does a good job of conveying Daniel's frustration in this episode, too. Even if it is kind of throwing a tantrum-ish, but I love it.
I can't tell you what I don't know.
You will. Or you will die.
Oh, also, I pulled that clip because of how dramatic the "or you will die" is.
That's fair.
I mean, Nem is pretty extra.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would say so.
I mean, he's been looking for his girlfriend for 4,000 years, so...
I don't understand why he didn't fucking leave.
I know, right?
Why didn't he go after her? Because he clearly understood what the Stargate was.
He was just waiting for someone to come from Earth to tell him what happened to Amaroka.
I'm like, obviously it had been thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and you're not immortal? Sorry. Are you an immortal being? Do you think that you just...
Maybe he doesn't know the gate code to get there.
But his mate did?
Someone to come back.
That's not a healthy relationship. You can't keep secrets like that, man.
Maybe she was getting away from him.
Man, that's harsh.
Wow. Oh, man. We need to hear the backstory now. How they got together. How their love fell apart.
Yeah,
there's an Omaroka fanfic out there somewhere. Oh,
my gosh. How did he know specifically that bit on the wall was written about his love? Like, where did that writing come from that Daniel's translating? Because all of it is 100% relevant to his wife, but he's not... But he obviously doesn't know that it's relevant to his wife, or else he would have followed through with it and gone searching, right?
I don't know what... Yeah, because he was just having him... I don't know, maybe he had just tracked down some writings from the time, and he clearly hadn't found anything because he needed Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so now Daniel is, like, under the gun. Gotta tell this guy something that you presumably don't know, or you're gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to Daniel's house, where the team is going through his things, and Sam's like, oh, look, he has expedition journals and wrote all about all our missions. And I'm like, there's just journals with all of the details of these classified missions just sitting on your shelf. Like, what the hell, Daniel? And she acted like this was totally normal. Do they all just have journals of their classified missions sitting in their house?
I want to read them all. So it's the first time we see Daniel's apartment. It's also, I think, the last time we see this version of Daniel's apartment, because the next time we see his apartment, he has a different apartment.
Yeah,
because
they moved to, they, like, sold this apartment. They, like, he was dead. They took all his stuff out and got rid of it.
No, well, they stopped packing shit up after Sam had her thing, so I don't know.
I assume somebody else came in and took all his stuff out.
Oh, no. What's the line? There's some line
at the very end. I pulled it. It's at the end. I pulled it.
Okay. Yeah, they said that his apartment's gone.
I don't remember that.
Well, I have it. I'll play it for you at the end.
Excellent. I also laughed that Daniel has a fish tank. Uh-huh. Like, when are you home long enough to take care of these fish?
Your fish are gonna die, bro.
I know.
It's like having a dog.
Okay, this is not based on anything, but I like the idea of, like, Jack sneaking into Daniel's apartment and replacing all of his fish after missions. Like, it's still surviving. It's still good.
Oh my gosh, like the parent that refuses to let their kid know.
Exactly.
And they believe that they have this ancient...
Nice. Yeah, so Sam looks into the fish tank and has a flashback and gets all upset.
And Jack's just immediately there.
Grabs her.
Shoulder.
Platonic shoulder touching.
So platonic.
Very platonic. Mm-hmm. I always fiercely grab my friends and make sure they're okay by grabbing their upper shoulders.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Upper shoulders.
I'm sorry, upper arms.
What would the lower, like the armpit? The lower shoulder?
Yeah. Sam looks super hot in this scene as well, by the way. Can we just...
I did send you a photo of it and said it's a look, so I mean, hey.
Oh, also, I also wrote that I like that, sorry, we're kind of bouncing around the scene, but that Teal'c had this memory and this thing with Daniel about the Pharaoh's game.
Yeah.
And this was a thing that he and Daniel shared.
Yeah, the Jackal and Hound. I loved that little moment.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful little character moment to connect those two. It was great.
Because Tilk kind of gave like a little mini history lesson, and the only way Tilk would have known that is if Daniel had taught him and explained it to him.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, there was also a bit of a reference to the movie because Daniel, so here, I'll just play the clip.
Colonel O'Neill thinks I'm a geek. I have no idea how to get us back. I'll never get paid.
So in the movie, he said he was never going to get paid when they were trapped on the planet. He didn't know how to get them back.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a fun little reference to that.
But yeah, so bebopping around. So yeah, so Sam has her vision. Jack realizes, they all realize that they've been thinking about bubbles, and there's these weird kind of like hallucinations they're having.
It kind of made me think of Finding Nemo, the fish that is always like, bubbles!
My bubbles!
And they rush out of Daniel's apartment, and they go back to the SGC.
Yep. And then we go to Daniel, and he asks about, he's like, where are my friends, basically?
Mm-hmm.
And he tells him, so this is when Nem fesses up that he gave them a memory. He said, basically, you're dead to them.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know what.
Oh, wow.
No, that's the wrong one.
I'm telling you, something's wrong.
Oh, yeah, that's, I pulled like a bunch of clips from that scene, but.
I thought you could just put out that Sam's, oh, wow. Just keep that as like a looped clip for Melanie.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I must have written this right. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
There you go, Melody. You're welcome. Okay.
So the clip I was actually trying to play.
I demand that I be allowed to speak with them.
They are gone.
No. They would not leave without me.
You are no more.
They think that I'm...
This memory I gave them so they would not return.
I love how certain he is that they wouldn't have left without him. It's so sweet.
Me too.
I love that. Like, it's like we talked about that this is one that was kind of a tipping point for us liking it, Mel, because... This is really where you feel like this is a team, they're a family. I mean, it's come up before. I think they've done a pretty good job of slowly establishing that how much they care about each other. But in this, I just love that surety that he doesn't even question it. Like, no, they would not have left without him. So
mm-hmm.
I love it.
I also made note, just backing up for like 2 seconds, when Nem walks from the water, he's clearly underwater,
mm-hmm.
and then like he's like miraged almost, like with the water rippling and then into the layer part. That was a very cool effect, and it held up very nicely.
The effect artists got very good at like people walking through watery things.
Yeah, and it was cool because I don't think I fully realized that, like, even though I could see the water illusion on the wall, I hadn't realized it was like underwater,
mm-hmm.
and that was the first time we realized it was.
Yeah, well, and a cool bit of tech that, like, you just have this water floating there as like a doorway. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you want to know my random and pointless note from this scene?
I would love to hear.
I wrote down Davy Jones has beautiful garb because he's wearing this like sheer kind of glittery cape.
He does
with these
have
cool boots, and I'm here for it.
Yeah. He had like the big like shoulder things in this scene. Yeah.
Yeah. He looked stunning.
It was definitely better than the trash, the six pack
things. Yeah. That's true. Yes. No, to your point, this was a great scene for Daniel because, yes, it's very sad.
Yeah. And then he gets accused of working with the Goa'uld.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so adamant. I pulled so many clips to you guys.
Yeah, you can play them. I mean, just play them and we'll cut them later if they suck.
Oh, I pulled this one mostly because it made me, hang on.
What is Omoroka? Who is Omoroka?
And that just made me think of...
Why is Omoroka?
Why?
Yeah, that's like, that's exactly where my brain went. Yeah, that's the only reason I pulled that one.
That's a great reason.
Because Infinity War. But so then he gets accused of being in league with the Goa'uld, and Daniel just kind of loses it. And this is his response.
Deceive.
Why? God, why would I do that?
You serve the Goa'uld.
No, no. Now, I lost my wife, my mate, because of the Goa'uld. They took her from me, and I despise them for that.
So I always find it interesting when they go to different planets and they find out that that Teal'c is with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that the people that inhabit the planet automatically assume that they're under the rule of the Goa'uld. And that they don't realize that they're actually free and they're not. They just automatically assume, therefore they don't really trust them.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a real bummer. Poor Teal'c, man.
I know.
Yeah,
poor.
And as a result, poor SG-1.
Yeah, no, you'd think that they would basically just start walking through the Stargate and announcing and being like, "He's a Jafar. It's okay. He's not with the Goa'uld. We're cool. It's good. We're cool. Not Goa'uld. We don't like the Goa'uld."
They should knit like a little friendship bracelet for the symbiote and just put it over the symbiote. So when it pops out, you can just see that it's a little friend.
No, no, no.
They can all have matching symbiote.
Right? No, gross.
Don't make us picture the symbiote with its gross penis face.
But it's a penis face with a friendship bracelet.
Cock ring?
A friendship cock ring.
Uh-huh. Hand woven. It's made with love.
Please cut that.
Nope. Okay.
We're trying to be a little bit legit, Jess.
No.
Not helping.
Cockring, cockring, cockring. All right. That could be for the bloopers, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, I thought that was a valuable contribution to this discussion, but I see I've been overruled.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Who knows how I feel when I edit it?
You don't want me chanting coffee?
No.
I think the chant is coming out.
I think the chant should just be the cold open of the episode.
It'll be the Chef Rod Black to Stargate podcast.
Cockring.
The cockring's in the shape of a Stargate.
Oh my god.
This escalated so quickly.
Okay, so.
back to the SGC.
And they're all talking to Janet, I think, at the room of the table. What is that room called?
The briefing room?
Are you still stuck on Cochrane?
Yes. They're in the briefing room talking to Janet, and then the gate starts up.
Mm-hmm.
And someone's coming back to the gate, and they all immediately get up and they go down to the embarkation room, aka the Stargate room, and they wait and see someone come through the wormhole, and they see Daniel come through the wormhole, and then we flash back to them and then go back to what was Daniel, and it was really SG-13?
Nine.
SG-9?
Or 4.
Insert number here.
6.
But they all thought it was Daniel, and they all couldn't explain why they thought it was Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I pulled that clip.
I thought Daniel Jackson was returning.
Oh my god, I thought the same thing. Why? Is he gone or isn't he?
You saw it happen.
Somebody want to tell me what the hell's going on? Because I'm starting to lose it here.
Yeah. They're all starting to lose it a little bit. They're cracking up.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm pretty sure at that point that they start thinking about it because Jack grabs his head.
Yeah, he goes,
"Sir, we've got to go back."
And then there's like a
music cue.
And I only bring this up because the second he grabs his head, do you know who's sitting next to him? It's
I'm gonna guess it's Sam. Yeah, Sam.
It's Sam, guys. Okay. And she immediately grabs his wrist and puts a hand on his waist and helps lead him out to the med bay. And I think that's important that we all note that and reflect upon that for a few seconds.
I just liked that he said we've got to go back so emphatically because it reminded me of Lost. When Jack Shepard said the same thing. Right? Doesn't he say we've got, what does he say? We have to go back. We've got to go back.
Yeah, it's true. He says that.
He says that.
We have to go back, Kate.
I believe you.
He does say that.
Yeah, so then we'll go back to Daniel. I just love that this guy can clearly read Daniel's mind somehow because he immediately identified him as the person who knew of Babylon, and he knows that he knows it.
He knows that Daniel knows of Babylon because he wrote in
cuneiform.
In cuneiform in the sand, and Daniel responded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he knows that he knows cuneiform and of Babylon.
Okay, yeah. So then he's really just basing all of this, assuming that Daniel actually knows this based on the fact that he knows the language?
Yes.
Okay.
But even still, that seemed it seemed like a really targeted moment whenever he started writing in the sand. Like, it looked like he was writing specifically for Daniel's...
Yeah, he went to Daniel and wrote in front of him.
So, yes, I would think, though, like, the way, like... that scene when we actually get the flashback of what really happened on the beach. So, like, he pops up out of the water and SG-1's there, Daniel's up front, the other three in the back. He goes to Teal'c and puts his hand on Teal'c's stomach to feel the symbiote, and then he, like, backs all the way back up, and then he writes in the sand. So I don't know if it was necessarily because he was writing to Daniel or if he was just trying to get away from Teal'c because he had the symbiote. So it's, I would say, up for interpretation.
Okay. Yeah, so then he tells him to tell him all he knows of Babylon, and Daniel is like, there's not that much that we know of Babylon. It was 4,000 years ago. And I love the quote where he says, most of our history is buried in time. It's just like,
mm-hmm.
Such a cool quote. I love it.
Yeah.
And
kind of Dr. Whovian.
What? Yeah. It is kind of Dr. Whovian. Then they kind of start to get to the heart of the matter. He tells him that Amaroka was afraid. And he's like, oh, like, tell me what she told you. And it just, he's like, well, tell me more. Well, she was in Babylon. I was like, no, I need more. Narrow it down for me here, bud.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he mentions Belus, and that rings a bell for Daniel. And he starts to kind of think maybe he does somewhere in his head know something about it. And we find out that Amaroka, I almost for real called her Omarosa. Amaroka.
We should embrace it and make it happen. Omarosa was actually an alien. And...
She was here to fight the gold.
She was here to fight the gold.
But interestingly, so Nem still is convinced that Daniel must serve the Goa'uld because she went to fight the Goa'uld and was lost. And so the humans must still be enslaved. And Daniel tells him that no, that the humans overthrew the Goa'uld, we're free. And in this conversation, I think Daniel used at least three different pronunciations of the word Goa'uld. And it just made me laugh of the conversations we've had about how you can say whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. I still feel like Nem's overall, like, I don't necessarily understand. So he knows that she's lost. I guess I just want to know, like, does she, like, he seems to think that she's still alive.
Yeah.
But he knows that she's quote unquote lost, however that means. To me, that means dead.
Mm-hmm.
So is it more that he wants to know how she died? But then he seems shocked when Daniel does figure... It was very, I just feel like his actual quest for knowledge is a little flimsy.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe it's like a Time Lord situation and maybe she's like died and came back somewhere out there.
Yeah.
Or maybe they reincarnate or something and he needs to go find her.
Gotta go to Earthsea or something.
I don't know. It's weird to me that he's like, it's been 4,000 years and he really still acts like she's maybe not dead.
Yeah.
Like either she's dead or she bailed on you, bro. Like,
how many people have come to the Stargate that you've been like writing cuneiform in the sand hoping that someone's gonna like write back versus fucking go through the Stargate, whatever.
Maybe not a lot, Jess. How do you
know? What I'm saying, like, why is he waiting for people to come through versus just going?
Because I told you he doesn't know the gate code. The gate address. Gate address.
I'll take gate code.
I mean, he's just a pathetic fish, man.
Aw, poor Davy Jones.
Poor Davy Jones.
Thanks, Andrea, for really contributing to Davy Jones.
Hey, you're welcome. I knew I'm here for something.
So then we go back to the SGC again.
Yes.
Yes, and in the briefing room.
Like wave therapy?
Yeah, they're playing like background noise
mm-hmm.
and trying to go through their memories of the thing.
I do like how Jack was kind of like, dude, this isn't working.
Yeah.
Jack was not having it.
And Teal'c's over there like, this is working. Yeah. I got this.
When Teal'c, I have a question. Because my clothes, so I watch it with closed captions so I can just make sure I catch everything. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, so when Teal'c like has his flashback and he yells and stands up. So to me, I heard him say Braytac.
Mm.
But my closed caption didn't say anything. It just said that he was yelling.
I think
but
it was just a... It,
sorry, and I don't know if y'all heard it, if you thought he said anything in particular, or if I just... My brain made up words.
It just sounded like the Cree language, like the Jaffa language that they... Like he was shouting something.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I didn't hear Braytac.
It was like Tamak or something. It was... I don't know. But it did.
I think my brain was tricking me.
But basically, so they conclude that they cannot... That they both... Both realities are equally real to them, that Daniel died and that Daniel's alive, and their brains can't pick. And basically Hammond is like, well, you're going to have to pick one before I can send you, like, you can't keep thinking both realities are true before I send you into the field. So
someone's which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like he was saying like, hey, best thing for them is to get them right back in action. And now he's like, you guys are benched until you can figure out your PTSD.
Yeah, he realized that Janet was very right.
Mm-hmm. I also noted, so is it just me or is it like every TV therapist named Mackenzie?
It does happen a lot, I think.
I feel like it's like the fourth or fifth TV therapist named Mackenzie. There's one in JAG named Mackenzie. There's one in SVU named Mackenzie. Right. A lot of Mackenzies out there.
Mm-hmm. You named two out of thousands
well,
of shows.
Well, three, but okay. Including this one. That was at least three.
Oh, I'm sorry, three. If we include SG-1, sorry.
They're
all basically military shows? Or
I withdraw
shows?
My statement. I'm oh my clearly God. Over generalizing. I was making conversation between oh friends. Word. It's fine. I'm going to start chanting Cochrane again. Just watch yourself. This is not a knock on Christopher Judge in any way, but I could not stop laughing at his facial expressions.
Oh my gosh.
They were fucking hilarious. Yes. Yes. them. Again, not prime material for a podcast.
For a podcast.
But that's fucking spot on. yes, he looks mixture of like focused and constipated and like in pain. Like all of those things. So, if not a knock on Christopher Judge, whatever he was going for, I'm sure he nailed. But his face just cracked me up.
Well, it was kind of jarring, too, because he's never emotes on his face.
No.
And so then to just have a very close-up shot of, like, the most obviously emoting face ever.
Yeah.
It lacked furrowed subtlety,
brow,
for sure.
Protruding yeah. lip.
Yep. I definitely noticed the same thing. That was funny. But then we cut back to Daniel, and he asks for more specifics on how Nem got SG-1 to leave, and Nem reveals like, oh, I implanted their memories. And he's like, well, if you have the ability to put memories in people's brains, then just take my memory of what you need and be done with it. And Nem is like, I could do it, but it'll damage you. And Daniel's like, well, you're gonna kill me otherwise, so just take it. I'd rather, you know. And the guy's like, well, I don't want to risk it. And I just think that it's such an interesting thing. Is it because Daniel's his only resource and he doesn't want to lose it? Or is it because he like has some morality that he doesn't want to hurt the guy that he threatened to kill for information and has been torturing? I don't know.
I think it's because they're bros.
Was like the mortality thing or the morality thing is he didn't want to kill Daniel to get the information that he wanted.
So his threat of killing him was probably pretty empty. Is that what we're assuming?
I think they bonded whenever Daniel said like, hey, look, they took my wife too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a certain bromance that's developing.
Daniel though.
That's like tentacle porn. We're back to it being weird again, is all I'm saying.
But Daniel developing a bromance with his captor, that's like a running theme on this show.
The standard. In the Illustrated Companion, there's a picture of Nem and Daniel, and like, it's captioned like Daniel and Nem forging a friendship.
Uh-huh.
So it definitely, to Andrea's point, there was definitely, I think they did form a bit of a bond.
Awesome. You had me worried there for a second whenever you just brought up tentacle porn and then you said in the Companion there's this picture.
Yeah, you guys should check out the Companion. There's some juicy stuff in there.
Oh my. So, basically, Daniel is willing to risk whatever can go wrong with the memory extraction because it feels like his only option at this point. Although Daniel does very reasonably suggest, hey, let's go back to Earth and I can find the book and we can read, we can find all you want to know about Babylon. It didn't seem like he gave really a real reason of, no, I can't go to Earth. It's because he's scared of the gold, right?
Yes. He thinks that there's the gold are still on Earth. Yep. He doesn't believe Daniel.
So the way that Daniel said at the end, he kind of basically says that he would rather die than never see his wife or friends again. I thought that was, again, really sweet. Strong Daniel episode.
Yeah, it's a good Daniel episode for sure.
So then we go back to the briefing room and we're still rehashing the death. And it's uncovered that, so they thought that they were only on the planet for 20 to 30 minutes. And this time, like, they went, Daniel dies, they come running back, basically. But they were gone for about 4 hours. And so there's this missing time. And so Mackenzie wants to try hypnosis. And Jack is super not on board and says he's not down with the whole bark like a chicken, cluck like a dog thing.
So I did not realize that, like, that's what the doctor was suggesting. I thought it was just this totally unprovoked brag where he's like, I've had great success with hypnosis. It's like, no one asked you.
I mean, Mackenzie does kind of come off as, like, the kind of guy who would just randomly throw a brag into the middle of a conversation. So
yeah. And I love that Sam chimes in with, I took a psych undergrad class, so I'm familiar.
Don't do it.
That's not how this works, Samantha Carter.
I mean, you know, I've had an undergrad psychology class, so that means I'm super qualified, right?
I was just, it made me laugh. It's like, okay. All right, Sam. Yeah, we've all taken a psych undergrad class. We all did that elective.
I mean, maybe Jack didn't.
Probably not.
Maybe he did something else.
He probably took sociology instead of psychology. Yeah. But, like, those were the options at my university anyway. So, but then Jack proposes going back, and Teal'c and Sam both freak. They're like, no. And here, I pulled the clip.
Request permission to go back through that gate and find out what the hell happened.
No!
Sir, we can't do that. I don't know why I just said that.
If that isn't a conditioned response...
I didn't cut him off. He doesn't say anything else after that.
Oh, okay.
I did write down in my notes, before he even said it was a conditioned response, I was like, they just hopped up like it was like
Pavlovian response.
Thank you. And then he said it was a conditioned response. I was like, yeah, okay.
You did it. Hey, you were paying attention in your undergrad psych class.
I do find it odd, like, the timing of this. Like, y'all didn't talk about the fact that there was this timing discrepancy. I guess you wouldn't think to ask it earlier, but, like, the timing discrepancy and then, like, this conditioned response. Like, they've mentioned going back a couple of times, and you didn't think it was weird how they were like, no, we can't do that. But now it's like, oh, the puzzle pieces are falling into place.
Hey, Jess, I hate to break it to you, but SG-1 losing time isn't news for them.
I know, but this is the first time it happens.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm
we
sorry.
Just we ahead. Just watched one of it, though.
I know. Yeah, ergo.
Now,
so good.
I keep thinking, I keep almost making references to the ones we watched this weekend that are way...
Yeah. Maybe this is the episode or, like, the mission that prompts, like, future questions about, like, how long do you think you were gone?
Yeah. So the end result of this is, like, they've come to the conclusion that their brains are messed with. And so Sam volunteers to be hypnotized because Jack's not down and Teal'c doesn't think it would work with his symbiote. And so Sam is going to be hypnotized.
Yeah.
And then we get the hypnosis scene.
Yes, which is a great fucking scene.
Oh my gosh.
It was really good.
So why was Jack there? I'm not upset about it. I'm just curious as to why he was there.
Teal'c was there too.
Was he?
Yeah, he's in the corner. They're both in the corner.
I didn't remember seeing Teal'c. I remember seeing Jack being there.
I'm saying that very confidently, but now I'm not sure.
You said it so confidently. I was like, she must be right, but I don't remember it.
I could have sworn he was off to the side next to Jack.
I don't think he was next to Jack. It was just Jack.
Well, he's his, maybe because he's her CO.
Or
he loves her.
That we're He has feelings. Feelings. I'll go with feelings.
He's had a crush on her.
There you go. I'll take that.
At the very least, he feels protective.
Yeah. And he wants to make sure she's okay.
Especially if they just lost Daniel, right, and they're all over the place right now, and she's going under this potentially, like, invasive, not, like, physically invasive, mentally invasive thing.
Yeah, and Mackenzie is a little bit sketchy. Like,
yeah,
he kind of comes off as the kind of the kind of doctor who would put you under hypnosis and then make you cluck like a chicken when you wake up. Like, I think he wanted to make sure Mackenzie wasn't going to do anything weird.
Mm-hmm. Plus, who would have been there to hug Sam when she needed it? So, everyone knows Jack gives the best hugs. So
he really does. But but first we get Amanda Tapping's stellar performance of her. Well, and we get the flashback. We see what actually happened when they went to the planet.
Yes.
And which we've kind of already covered that when we were talking about it. And so, but then she has these like memories of being underwater and it being cold and wet and. And man, Amanda Tapping kills it.
Yeah.
So freaked out. And then she realizes that he's not dead, that they left him behind. And I'll play the clip and then we can discuss the hug.
Dad, get out of here!
Carter!
Oh my God, Colonel. We left him behind. Left him behind.
I know. It's all right. We're going back.
She's so distraught, but they left him behind.
That's such a good delivery of that line.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that makes her crack is knowing that they, like, abandoned part of the team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which they never would have done if they thought he was still alive.
Yeah.
And then her voice is all muffled into his shoulder. And his hand is in her hair. His hand.
And he had to check himself because he was about to put his face in her neck and then realized that he couldn't. Just saying. Aww. It was there.
That's how he hugs. He puts his face in people's necks. It's the best hugs. Hashtag here for the hugs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that our new hashtag?
I don't know. I actually got that hashtag from a 100 blogger Tony watches. She always says that about the 100, that hashtag here for the hugs.
This is going to sound really creepy, and you can cut it if it's too creepy, but RDA hugs the same in every single show he's in, is all I'm saying. Like, that exact, like, the haircut stroke situation plus, like, putting his face in people's necks. That's just how RDA hugs.
When he gets his arms, like, all the way around the person.
Mm-hmm. Which is why when I meet him, I'm going to have a very specific request.
Jess, I love that you know that just off the top of your head. Like, in every show he's in, this is how he hugs.
Well, because he hugs a lot of people in MacGyver, and he hugs the women in MacGyver the exact same way that he hugs Sam in SG-1. I'm just saying, there's some other things, but I don't want to go into it.
And in this TED Talk, anatomy of a hug right here.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the next special episode, guys. Anatomy with a hug, or anatomy
of a hug
with Jess.
And we're going to discuss all of the hugs that Jack does without any video. That's the best part about this.
Super engaging for everybody.
And we're all like miming it right now as we talk about it.
We gotta get better with our words.
So Sam was crying during the hypnosis scene, which like broke my heart.
Yeah.
It breaks everyone's heart. Isn't that a fact that RDA would get all upset on set whenever Amanda Tapping was crying?
That there is a fact.
Yeah.
God, she's just so talented. Every time AT cries, it gives me chills.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I can't wait for us to get to Singularity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good one.
What season is that?
This one. Yeah. It's in like 4 episodes.
Yeah, it's really soon.
Mm-hmm. You should watch that one. If you don't watch any more episodes, just watch that one.
Yeah, Andrea, let's bring you in for the highlights. You can watch the best of SG-1.
See, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I really enjoyed this episode. To be honest, once it ended, I turned to Chelsea and I was like, was that 42 minutes?
She did. She said that.
If time flies when you're having fun, man.
Well, and the pacing of this episode was very good, I thought. So then we go back to Daniel and he's in this weird, like, plastic memory contraption with his body bent kind of at an awkward angle. It looked pretty uncomfortable.
Tentacle porn.
Okay. So he basically, Nem is trying to get him like, think about him, Amaroka, think about Amaroka. And then he starts like reciting the book that he read about her once. And it's basically just tells him that she's dead.
Yeah. And that Belarus was a gold.
Belus, yeah.
Oh, Belus, not Belarus.
That Belarus.
The entire city was a gold.
And Daniel was super sorry.
Yeah.
It wasn't even his fault, but he was like really like
upset.
Upset yeah. about it. And then I wrote poor Nem.
I wrote poor Daniel. That's weird.
Yeah, poor Daniel. I mean, I feel like Nem really should have figured this out, but assumed.
Oh my gosh, did you pull the clip of him like screaming? That was so funny. Yeah.
I complain now. I was gonna have that be our going out clip. Was him yelling?
I teared up.
I did feel bad for him. I know it was supposed to be this really heart wrenching moment, but the just acting choice of the way he delivered that was odd.
Well, and the way they did the audio where it was like echoed on top of it was a little weird. I can play that now. We can talk about it. I was going to have that be our closing clip, though. Just end it.
That's so weird. That made me tear. When he screamed like that, it made me tear up.
Aw.
Well, it was like a mixture of emotions for me because I was like, I really did feel for the guy. But then there the audio, the way that it was overlaid where it was like almost separate voices crying was weird. It was just kind of weird. But I did feel the guy's pain. He was very attached to her. 4,000 years, man.
That's pining.
He's 4, like
4,000 years of pining.
Yeah, he's like Rory Pond levels of pining.
There wasn't like another fish for him to even try and move on with, though.
Not that we saw anyway.
There were no more fish in the sea
by himself.
So then we go back to the SG-1, or no, SG-1 comes to the back to the planet, and Sam's wearing a helmet again. they're at the shore, but it's like they don't know what to do. They like run out to the water. They're like, we gotta get him, we're not going back without him. Like didn't bring scuba equipment, I don't think so. But then Nem comes out of the water and Daniel comes swimming back out. Although before that we get his kind of goodbye with Nem, right? It's a weird back and forth where then we see the underwater scene, right? No, I don't remember.
No, Nem comes out.
And then Daniel comes swimming after him and comes out of the water. And he's like, don't shoot him, don't shoot him, don't shoot him.
Yeah. Can we address the way in which Daniel comes out of the water, though?
It's like a little weird the little dive.
Little mermaid. Yes. Not quite Little Mermaid. Explosion from the water.
It was dramatic.
And then he, like, walks a couple steps. And then he, like, does this weird dive back into the water. Where it's like, clearly you can just walk the rest of the way, but then he does like this over dramatic dive.
Yes. And like, why? You don't have to swim with your head underwater. Like, you can do that same swim with your head above water, buddy. Like, you're just doing a breaststroke. Okay.
I had noted that.
Some of Nem's extraness rubbed off on Daniel.
I guess it did. Yeah. So then we get a little bit of an exchange with Nem, and they're like, oh, we want to be friends with you. And of course, that never gets revisited.
Mm-mm. Although we keep saying that, and then as we rewatch episodes, we're like, oh shit, they do bring that up later.
Yeah. So we've said that at least twice so far, that they mentioned things and never got brought up. And then it just so happened this weekend, we watched two episodes where things we said never get brought up again got brought up again.
So real quick, can we delete those parts so that they never get caught up again? So we don't make sound like aliens.
We already listened to it.
This is part of the rewatch experience.
We were wrong about that.
We are human.
So then SG-1 says their goodbyes to Nem.
I thought it was weird that like there was really no like. I know what show we're watching and there's no emotional fallout and all that jazz, but like, I just feel like there should have been, Jack should have said something in particular, like as upset as he was, like, you fishy scum, I don't know, something. I just feel like Jack didn't say anything to Nem really, and there was no,
confrontation. You'd think they would have been like, was it really necessary to like, that was pretty terrible, the thing you did to our brains.
Ask for our help.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't have to just steal everything. Although, again, he thought they were in the service of the gold. So there was a reason for him to do it. But it is interesting that it's one of the few times that Daniel's like, don't shoot him, he's a good guy. And Jack isn't like kind of questioning that and wanting to be maybe more aggressive about it. I think he was just so relieved to see Daniel and having him just be Daniel. Like, don't shoot him.
Yeah. Typical Daniel.
Typical Daniel. And then we get the wonderful scene. I think I pulled pretty much just the whole conversation as they're walking back to the Stargate.
This is a long story.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Tell us about it over sushi.
That's funny. I will after I go get some sleep.
Ah, home.
Yeah,
about that apartment.
Oh, you didn't?
The day after the memorial service.
Memorial service?
Colonel said some really nice things.
He did.
He did?
Love it.
It's so cute.
I just think it's so funny, too, like we just talked about, that they were all in anguish pretty much this whole episode, worrying about each other and presuming each other dead. And then they get back together and there's no, like, you know, hugging Daniel or being like checking and making sure he's OK. It's just like, oh, we're just going to snark. This is good.
It's comfortable. The snark is comfortable. So when you're all back together, it's just comfort.
Mm-hmm. I did relate to Daniel, though, whenever you said that he was ready to get some sleep, because I watched this episode after getting only 3 to 4 hours of sleep.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coming back to.
She took the red eye.
I took the red eye coming here.
Ooh. Yikes. That's rough. Kudos to you.
Yeah, I was pretty delirious by the time we finally wrapped things up that night.
Did that enhance that deliriousness enhance your enjoyment of this episode?
I don't know, possibly.
It's the only way she's seen it, so.
Okay, so just sleep, deprive yourself of sleep for every episode of SG-1 that you watch. And I think that's the key.
Yeah. So I'm going to play, it just made me laugh. I pulled some clips. I made a little compilation here of basically the gist of this episode.
Reveal. Fate. Omar Aka. Reveal fate, Omaraka. Reveal fate, Omaraka. Reveal fate, Omaraka.
What fate, Omaraka? What fate, Omaraka? What fate, Omaraka?
Okay.
What fate? Remember, Omaraka. What fate, Share?
Oh my gosh. We are Groots.
That shouldn't be funny, but it is.
I didn't realize. I thought it was looping for a second.
No.
He like, delivers it exactly the same. I was like, wait.
Those were all different instances of what fate Omar.
That's consistent, man. That's some consistent delivery.
Yep. I think that's pretty much it. That's the gist of the episode, guys. What?
Awesome.
Fate.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Omaraka. Let's rate this bad boy.
You go first.
Yep, you go first.
No, you know what? Guests go first.
Let's go, Andrea.
Hang on. What's the rating system?
Out of 7 chevrons.
Out of 7 chevrons.
So 7 is like best episode ever.
Well, this is the best episode I've ever seen.
Best episode, but like in terms of television in general too, not just Stargate.
Wait, I'm rating it against all of television?
Well, no, in terms of like how you enjoy television shows and if it's one you like a lot or would rewatch.
Okay.
Usually we take into account like if we liked the characters and if the story flowed well and if it has rewatchability.
I thought... I did like the characters. I liked the sort of team dynamic that was sort of fueling this episode. I thought all of the actors did an absolutely stellar job. And like we've mentioned before, I do think that the pacing was really good. I would give it a 5 chevrons out of 7.
All right.
Cool.
I will give it a 5.5 chevrons. I'm going to go half, but I'm not quite locking on the 6th one. Yeah, for all reasons Andrea just said. And the only reason I'm not giving it a higher score is just because I do find, I think Nem is a little bit of a flimsy villain.
Yeah.
I wish that his, like, rationale was stronger. And some of Christopher Judge's faces just made me laugh really, really hard, even though it was supposed to be very serious. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. 5.5. And also Hammond's weird PTSD stance. So, yeah. 5.5.
I'm going to give it a 6, only because, I mean, for the rest of the reasons that all of you said, but it gets a 6 for me because it was the episode that made me want to watch the rest of Stargate.
That's a good reason.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I probably would have stopped.
Whoa.
Yeah? Could you imagine?
I know. We would never have been.
Where would we be? Happened.
None of us would have watched it.
No.
No.
Wow.
Yeah?
What a legacy.
I'm just saying, no. I'm just saying.
That sounded more like sarcastic and downputting than I meant it. I was actually being genuine.
I mean, that's what it sounded like, but hey, it's cool.
I love it both ways.
I think I will give it a 5 out of 7. No, the only reason I don't give it a 6 is, again, because of, I agree about Nem. And when I had to go through and pull all of the What Fate Omarokas, it kind of hurt my opinion of the episode a little bit.
Look, come join me in 5.5 land.
Yeah, 5.5, sure. I enjoy the episode. I love the team support and how much they love each other. Honestly, I really am here for the hugs. So when there's a Jack hug in an episode, it bumps it at least a half chevron. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we covered pretty well how we felt about the episode during the episode. So
I agree.
Air medal award for this episode.
I'm sorry, what?
We give an air medal award.
Air medal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like your MVP.
The MVP of the episode.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Daniel.
I was going to say Daniel or Janet.
Yeah.
But Janet, I guess, like, right? Janet ultimately didn't, like, do anything to contribute.
I mean, I love that she stood her ground and made sure that the general didn't just send them right back through the Stargate.
Yeah.
But I think Daniel.
I think it's Daniel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say Daniel or Sam.
Yeah.
We would give it to Sam every episode, so sometimes we have to refrain.
So
Sam's going to rack up a lot of air medal awards as we get further along in the show. And she starts saving our asses in the last 2 minutes of every episode.
We need to keep track of who we give air medals to.
We can go back and double check that. So I would say that Amanda Tapping gets, like, the actor air medal award for this episode.
Okay,
but
that's
Daniel
fair.
Gets the, like, as a character, gets the air medal award.
Yeah, that's okay. Fair.
And you know what? What's interesting about the acting thing, so in the Illustrated Companion, the whole, so, like, you know, each episode has, like, a little blurb, an area they focus on, and this episode is all about Michael Shanks and his acting in this episode, and it's all about how Michael Shanks was, like, you know, you don't get to, like, dive into the emotions of a character very often, but in this episode you do, and it's, like, and the directors and the producers were saying that, like, this was, like, a really, like, Shanks-heavy acting episode. And not that he doesn't do a good job, but I just don't think that his acting stands out nearly the same way that Amanda Tapping's acting stands out.
There was a moment where his acting really did stand out to me whenever he went through the process of remembering, whenever Davy Jones said the name of the guy, like the name of the bad guy that killed his wife. I don't remember.
Bellis?
Yeah, Bellis. Thank you. And Daniel, like, has to rack his brain to, like, figure out how he knows that name. He sort of cycles through several stages of like, remembering. And you can kind of see that file get pulled out of the filing cabinet in his mind. And I thought that was he did a really good job with that moment.
Michael Shanks will be delighted to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I also did really appreciate how Michael Shanks always seemed like, could portray frustration because he couldn't understand what Nim wanted, and so he was frustrated and Nim was frustrated, and so it was just the whole colossal frustration.
Mm-hmm. Positive feedback loop.
I just thought of a really dumb pun. It's the secret of Nim.
Oh my god.
Myself from
started laughing while you were talking because it popped in my brain.
Is anybody even drunk tonight? So like, what's going on? I said, "What is anyone even drunk tonight? We're so like
no.
slap happy.
I'm just so happy to talk to you guys again."
Yeah.
That was like sarcasm. I'm genuinely happy.
No, no, it's like the seeing your long time far away friends in person hangover.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you just say?
When you see your friends that live far away and then you don't see them anymore, then you have like a hangover of like you saw them and then you didn't, and now you're like sick and broken and your head hurts.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Right. I understand that. For some reason, I thought you were going to talk about a hangout. And then whenever you said hangover, my brain just like lost the train of thought. I apologize.
Yeah, you're fired.
Damn.
Well, that was short-lived. Thanks for having me, guys. It's a real pleasure. I'll just see myself out.
All right. So if you would like to reach out to us, talk about this episode or any other episode, you can reach us at ChevronsLocked7 on Twitter or on Gmail, ChevronsLocked7@gmail. You can reach me, Chelsea, on Twitter at Cahils with a K. I don't know if I've ever spelled that for people. Or you can find me on Tumblr at Pianosa2toTheFighting8.
And you can find me, Jess, on Twitter at Prof Tennant or on Tumblr at Professor Tennant.
And you can find me, Melanie, on Twitter at Melanie Martian, MARSHAN, or you can find me on Tumblr at My Stupid Dumb Flyboy.
And if you want to find me, my name is Munker4444 on Tumblr and Munker4444 on Twitter.
Our next episode after this one will be Hathor.
Yay!
We're fucked.
Best episode ever. So please join us. I think the ones where we get angry about episodes are kind of fun. So
yes. Do we think we will be more angry or less angry than Emancipation?
I think we'll be equally as angry, maybe a little bit more angry. No, okay. I don't know.
I haven't watched Hathor since the first time I watched Hathor, so it's going to be fresh anger, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you'll have to tune in to that episode to find out just how much on the anger scale it reaches.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go ahead and close this episode with maybe in preparation for that episode.
Okay, out of context, that's fucking hilarious.
It's just so funny.
I also think it works as like, that's how we feel about Hathor for next week.
Me now.
Mm-mm.
Should I do my Scottish accent?
That's what I was about to suggest. I really want to hear it.
That was one time only, and it was not a Scottish accent.
That was so great.